National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Pope Leo XIV will embark on his first apostolic journey to Turkey and Lebanon from November 27th to December 3rd, commemorating the 1700th anniversary of the First Council of Nicaea. This week on Register Radio, we're joined by Bishop Gregory Mansour of the Maronite Eparchy of St. Maron of Brooklyn. And then, last week, Pope Leo XIV had a very memorable virtual encounter with young people at the National Catholic Youth Conference in Indianapolis. We talked with two reporters who were there, Tessa Gervasini and Jonah McCowan. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, host of Register Radio and EWTN News' Vice President and Editorial Director. I'm joined, as always, by Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. Hello, Shannon.
Hello, Matthew.
Well, Pope Leo XIV's first apostolic journey has taken him to Turkey and Lebanon, a trip that marks the great call of unity in the Church of the Council of Nicaea in 325 and includes ecumenical and interreligious outreach, a plea for peace, and especially support for local Christian communities. Among the many Christians eager to welcome the Pope to Lebanon are the more than 1 million Maronite Catholics. To help us appreciate more fully the importance of the Holy Father's visit to Lebanon and to Turkey, we're joined by Bishop Gregory Mansour, who has served as the Eparch of the Maronite Eparchy of St. Maron of Brooklyn since 2004. Your Excellency, welcome to Register Radio.
Thank you, Matthew, and thank you, Shannon. Good to be with you.
Well, it's in some ways difficult to overstate the significance of Pope Leo's first trip. He's gone, as we've noted, to Turkey, to Lebanon, but he's also commemorating that 1700th anniversary of the Council of Nicaea. For you, what does this trip signify?
It's much deeper than most people give it credit for. It's not only that he's following the footsteps of Pope Francis, who had arranged this trip and before he passed away, God rest him in peace. But Pope Leo brings to it a different aspect. Pope Leo is very attuned to not only the theology of Nicaea and the work of the Council, but if people recognize in his last Wednesday audience, he spent time studying and looking at Nicholas of Cusa, who 1,000 years after St. Augustine, was a prominent Augustine scholar, but had a great love for dialoguing with Islam and dialoguing with Eastern Christians. And that's not just by chance that Pope Leo discussed him in the Wednesday audience. I think Pope Leo really understands fully and is making a contribution to dialogue with Islam and dialogue with Eastern Christians. So I'm very excited about this visit.
Yes, Your Excellency. So the big commemoration is the 1700th anniversary of the Council of Nicaea. Were you surprised that Lebanon was added to this first apostolic journey?
No, it makes perfect sense. Why? Because Lebanon is an unusual place where Catholics and Orthodox live in dialogue. Catholics and Muslims live in dialogue. So it makes perfect sense. Nicaea, the council in 325, was trying to grapple with the great mystery of the person of Jesus Christ. And still, I firmly believe, as does Pope Leo, that the person of Christ is such a gift, even for Muslims, and especially for Christians, Orthodox, Catholic, and Evangelical. So this is a perfect fulfillment of his trip to Nicaea.
This is also a huge moment for the Maronite Church. Can you, for our listeners, can you tell us a little bit more about the Maronite Church and its and how it fits into the multi-religious picture in this region?
Thank you for the question. So the Maronite Church is one of 23 different Eastern Catholic churches, all in communion with the Pope of Rome. So there are 24 churches sui juris, the Latin Church, the largest of us all, and then 23 Eastern Catholic churches, the Maronite being one of them. the Maronite Church is kind of unique because it's never had an Orthodox or a Protestant counterpart. It's never divided. And it's also unique because it's named after a person, St. Maron. St. Maron was a monk and a hermit and a priest who died in 410. And at the time of his death, about 800 monks gathered around him. And they became known as the House of Maron or Beit Maron or Maronites, as we know them today. And it was almost a monastic movement that was evangelical in its nature, almost like Benedictine monasteries in 4th, 5th, and 6th century Europe. And so the Maronites evangelized the countryside and then finally found their final home in Lebanon, and then from there went throughout the whole world. And I'm a result of that as being a Maronite in America. So I hope that gives you the picture.
It does very clearly. One question that is often asked is, what are Christians facing today in Lebanon? And how does that compare with previous decades and even previous centuries?
So just to give you an idea of Lebanon first. So Lebanon was carved out of the Middle East at the end of World War I. And who helped to do that was the Maronite Patriarch, Patriarch Hawaiik. At 76 years old, he went to Versailles to negotiate with the Allies and to say that Lebanon needs to be carved out. Why? To become a refuge for Muslims and Christians alike. And at that time, the Christians were the majority. But he wanted Lebanon not to be just a sole Christian enclave. He wanted Lebanon to have Sunni Muslims, Shiite Muslims, Druze, and all the variety of Christian communities. And so today, we're kind of fighting for this consensual democracy, this Muslim-Christian conviviality that Patriarch Hawaiik envisioned. And it's still an experiment. It could fail, but we hope not. We hope that it continues. And just to give you the geopolitical landscape, the president of the country is always Maronite. The prime minister is always a Sunni Muslim. And the speaker of the house is always a Shiite Muslim. That's the consensual democracy that is Lebanon, so that it can be a conviviality of Christian and Muslim.
I know Christians and non-Christians alike are so excited to see the Pope. There's been so much instability in the country, a lot of suffering there. Do Christians dare to hope that the Pope's visit will have any kind of an enduring impact on stabilizing the country or giving peace greater momentum there?
There's great hope, Shannon and Matthew. There is great hope in Lebanon. Lebanon, I say, works by miracles because it really should have failed a long time ago. Its neighbors are not the easiest to get along with, and there's always conflicts. And as our beautiful patriarch, Patriarch Ra'i, keeps saying, Lebanon needs to be like a Switzerland of the Middle East. Switzerland did not get involved in either of the wars in Europe. And Patriarch Ra'i keeps saying, the principle of neutrality ought to be what guides us, because Lebanon is not made to enter into this conflict or that conflict, but it's made to be a refuge for all people so that they can live, whether they're Muslim or Christian, they can live their freedom. And so, yes, Lebanon has certainly faced a lot. Terrible economic, and then for years, no government. And then the explosion in 4 or 5 years ago in the Beirut port. And then the struggling between Hezbollah and Israel. So what keeps Lebanon afloat? Not only the miracles, but the practical charity of Christians, Catholics, Orthodox, and evangelicals. The hospitals, the schools, the nursing homes, the drug rehabilitation centers, the Caritas facilities. That's what makes Lebanon the beautiful place that it is.
You know, while I have the two of you on, I'm fascinated by Leo's interest or nod that he's made to the Eastern churches. And I know Matthew and I have talked about on the show, watching carefully Leo's liturgical style and liturgical personality. But Your Excellency, early on in his pontificate, one of the first groups he talked to was the Eastern churches, and he really prayed the leaders of the Eastern churches, and he really praised their liturgies. Can you reflect on the significance of that?
Yes. If anybody wants to go even deeper, they should Google this Pope Leo and the Eastern Christians, Eastern Catholics. He had a wonderful audience with all the Ukrainians at the peak of their tragic war aggression of Russia. He gathered all of the bishops, the priests, even the head of their church, and they all prayed at St. Peter's Basilica. That was a beautiful moment. And then during the election, Cardinal Gujarati, the head of the Eastern Catholic Churches, had a beautiful homily and reflection on the importance of the Eastern Catholic Churches. And then, of course, Pope Leo himself, I think he loves to chant. He loves to enter deeply into liturgical praise. And so and then he's received so many delegations of Eastern Catholic and Eastern Orthodox. And he makes no bones about this. He desires, and he says it, he desires the day in which we can receive communion from one another. So I think there's a passion in his soul for this, because there was a passion in our Lord's soul for this.
Pope Leo has also stressed from the very beginning of his pontificate that great and powerful impulse toward unity in the church, that new document in Unitate Fidei, reflecting on the Council of Nicaea, stresses that. But I also want to make sure that everyone is aware of something that you wrote. The title of it is The Council of Nicaea, Our Longing for Church Unity. I wanted to make sure that we had a chance to ask you a little bit about that and where people can read it and also take a look at it.
Thank you, Matthew. It's on my website. It's also on the Facebook page for the Eparchy, and it pales in comparison to the Holy Father's reflection, but mine really is a cry from the heart. I am begging Eastern Christians to find a way to unity. We have the same sacraments, the same Nicene faith, and the same apostolic succession. What are we waiting for? What are we waiting for? Especially when the world is divided. You have so many difficulties in the world where united Christians, even if it's just for now, the Catholic Church and Eastern Christians. So with those Eastern Christians, you have three groups. One is the Assyrian, or the Church of the East. And that division came in 431. The next one they're called the Oriental Orthodox, and that division was 451. And then the third group is called Eastern Orthodox, and that split was 1054. Now, those three communions of Eastern churches don't have communion with one another, but the Catholic Church has opened our communion to them. It's my hope one day that we can at least share Holy Communion. And I say at least because it is not the end of the fulfillment of union. It should be the beginning. We shouldn't wait until we're perfect to be receiving the medicine of unity and the medicine of healing, the medicine of reconciliation, which is Eucharist. We should share the Eucharist now. There's nothing to stop us. And then we'll worry about the primacy of the Pope, the Immaculate Conception, the Filioque, the different concept of marriage and divorce. Those are small things that we can get to. But let's begin with communion. So that was my desire in writing that little reflection on Nicaea.
Yeah, thank you for that. And as you write, may this 2025 Jubilee and this 1700 year anniversary of Nicaea embolden us to trust the Spirit, to embrace the medicine of mercy, and to take the risk of reconciliation. Well, Your Excellency, thank you so much. We'd love to have you back sometime to reflect once the Holy Father returns from his trip. We can talk about some of the potential fruits.
I'd be very happy to. Thank you for this discussion.
All right. God bless.
You. Thank you, Matthew and Shannon.
You're listening to Register Radio here on EWTN Radio. When we come back, we talk with Tessa Gervasini and Jonah McCowan about Pope Leo's remarkable digital visit with young people at the NCYC. Don't go anywhere.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Well, last week in Indianapolis, Pope Leo XIV had a truly remarkable digital visit with the young participants at the National Catholic Youth Conference in Indianapolis. To talk about that encounter and everything else that happened were two very brave reporters who made their way to Indianapolis. Tessa Gervasini of the Catholic News Agency and Jonah McCowan of the National Catholic Register both were there for the duration. And I have to single out, especially Jonah, for your pretty remarkable in-the-field reporting. You were pretty fearless dealing with the young people.
Well, thank you, Matthew. It was a wonderful experience and not as scary as it might have looked on camera.
Well, Tessa, let's start with you, because this is, for you, this is, must have been a fun experience. This is probably your first time at this type of a gathering, was it?
Yes, it was. I haven't been to something quite like this before and quite this large. So it was a great experience, and to be around so many young people that all share the same faith and the same hopes was a really remarkable experience.
Tessa, I know there's so much to say about the pinnacle of the week was really this encounter, this digital encounter between the Pope and 16,000 young people in Indianapolis. Of course, a lot of other people, including myself, were watching the live stream broadcast from EWTN. So there's a lot to discuss there, but I thought it was a remarkable moment. You've written a wonderful piece, 10 Takeaways from Pope Leo XIV's Address to Youth at NCYC. I know there are 35 takeaways, but let's talk about some of the 10. What struck you so much about this roughly 45, 50 minute of dialogue?
I think what struck me the most was how well he was able to speak in a way that I think would resonate with, yes, young people, but really everyone. But the things he said, I know if I were 16 and going to this conference, I think I would just really be able to understand it so clearly. A lot of the kids were asking about how to recover from mistakes and how to, you know, accept God's mercy. And he explained it so well. He said, he kept saying, you know, we all make mistakes. We are able to be forgiven. And when you're young, I think it's so important to hear that. He also spoke with the young people about how to find real friends and the importance of that. I think that's something that's so pivotal in their lives right now. So to hear that and, you know, hear that from someone so high up in the church, but also in a way that's so personal. I spoke with the few students that spoke with him after the conversation, and all of them kept saying how personal it was. That was the common theme they said to me. One of them said he felt like he was talking to a church mentor that was just someone his age like that. And I think that was what was really striking about it. He said it didn't feel like I was talking to someone who has this power or anything. He just said it felt like a friend. And I think that was what was really important.
Yeah, just wanted to note, I was so struck by the exchange on the Register, ncregister.com. We have an editorial really encouraging people to watch the video, which is available online, because as we say in the editorial, in addressing these young Catholics, Pope Leo is really speaking to all of us, because the spiritual guidance, the pastoral words of wisdom he offered were really for everybody, and they were so practical, and as you say, down to earth. So, yeah, I really encourage people, even if you're not a young Catholic. In fact, as our editorial says, the older you are, maybe the more you need to watch this, because it'll really, it's just good, good, wholesome sustenance.
So, Jonah, what's your takeaway of this encounter?
Right. It really, in some ways, felt like a watching the moon landing moment. Like, it felt very historic to see the first American Pope addressing, a whole stadium of mostly Americans, almost all Americans, and teenagers at that. So that was just remarkable to see. And as Tessa mentioned, it really seemed as though his words really, really resonated with the kids who were in attendance. I got the opportunity to speak to several of the young people who asked questions of the Pope, and they really were on cloud nine. They were just amazed that their names came out of the Pope's mouth, that he really seemed to see them and to be interested in what they had to say. And that really goes to what I think was my biggest takeaway from the dialogue, which was that the Pope said in explicit terms, he said, "We want to hear from young people. You are the now of the church. You're not just the future. We want to hear your ideas, what you value, and your ideas matter to us." And to hear that straight from the Pope, especially in most people's native English, was, I'm sure, really remarkable and unforgettable for so many of the attendees. And just briefly, the other thing I'll mention is that his words were just so Christocentric. He just kept bringing it back to Jesus Christ, the person of Jesus, and just a very simple message of practice your faith, go to Mass, take time for prayer. Really simple stuff, especially if you're, kind of reading a transcript of it. But in the moment when he was delivering it, I personally felt it was very powerful. And I am sure that many of the student attendees would feel the same.
Yeah, just to quote from Tessa's piece, just to give you a little sample of this, another topic he touched on was the idea of finding real friends and what he called true friends. And he says, a real friend is not only someone who's fun to be with, that is good too, but it's someone who helps you grow closer to Jesus, someone who encourages you to become a better person. Good friends also push us to seek help when life gets difficult or confusing. It's just that, he really spoke directly to them and to all of us. But Jonah, I know, as compelling and dramatic as what was going on inside the arena, there was a whole scene outside the arena that you were a part of. Can you describe that a little bit? And for sure, tell us about these hats and these clothespins that we saw you with during the broadcast.
Right. Well, there, as you mentioned, there was plenty going on at the conference other than the big arena sessions. I got to go to the exhibit hall where they had many, universities, religious orders, vendors there, and the kids were having a great time. They were all doing karaoke and doing fun things like that. But there were also a lot of really meaningful exhibits where the students were able to, for example, weave mats for the homeless. They were using plastic grocery bags to kind of recycle them and create something for the homeless there. I believe that was a booth sponsored by St. Vincent de Paul Society. And so it was a very, very fun kind of party atmosphere the whole time. But as you mentioned, the hats are a very big part of the culture of NCYC, and that's been true for a long time, at least ever since I went as a student 14 years ago. But the students were kind of in this arms race to create the most interesting or large or colorful or light up hat, and they would trade them with each other. So you'd see these big cowboy hats or hats that looked like a Christmas tree. And then there were also these clothespins that people would write little messages on them, like Jesus loves you, something like that. And then in the hallways, they would clip them on people. So you might find yourself coming home with a bunch of clothespins clipped on you in various colors and messages. And yes, as you alluded to during the broadcast, there was a fun bit where a bunch of young people clipped a very large number of clothespins on me as I walked past. And that was very fun to shoot.
I'm glad to know, as I was joking earlier, that you survived all of that. And for both of you, it's affirming, but also we definitely want to call out your great reporting on television, but especially at the Catholic News Agency and ncregister.com. We know that the Holy Father is likely to show up in the United States at some point, and I know that young people are going to be very, very interested in that as well. So thank you for this coverage, and thank you for what we know is going to be a really interested young people in the future. Well, that's it.
Thank you so much.
That's it for Register Radio for this week. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks so much for joining us. On behalf of our producer, Michael McCall, and Shannon Mullen, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Please take care and God bless.